This presentation is brought to you by BenLowry.com.
Hello, Rob Ryder. How are you today?
I'm great, Ben. Great. Thanks for asking.
Well, it's my pleasure. Let me just give a little intro so people know who you are. Rob Ryder is a really cool name, by the way.
It was a nickname given to me many years ago, and it just kind of stuck.
So. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I receive periodic kind of email. You kind of do like a mailing list mail out regarding things to do with court of record and just general things to do with law and stuff. And I always enjoy receiving them. So tell us, give us a little introduction of who you are and what you've been doing and how you got into all this.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, like everybody else, I was driven here because of what was happening to me. I've really been looking at this stuff for a couple of years. Before that, I was really heavy into alternative energy and Victor Schauberger and people like that, you know. But I was kept from doing that because I kept getting this damn shit in the mail or somebody wanted some more money, you know. So it drove me into looking at this end of things instead. So I listened to hours of talk shows of all different kinds, and then read what people said to read and so forth. And, you know, from that, I started to draw my own conclusions. And mine is that, you know, if it has a number in front of the law, it doesn't apply to me. Right. That's all statute law and it's all civil law. And an easy way to tell the difference is go to the Bible, a searchable Bible, and put in the word person and see what the Creator thinks of you being letting yourself be called a person. And in all their statutes and codes and so forth, it only ever talks about the person. And so, you know, that kind of drove me to looking at another gentleman named Blackstone's, one of your countrymen, Blackstone's Commentaries on English Law, and written in the 1700s. And it's just one of the latest versions of common law that was put in, put into a book. And it's not written as statutes. It's written as a chapter book and it's just chapter after chapter. And he pretty much explains in his first two books what has happened to create the system we have now. And I really don't want to get too deep into that because that could be a whole, you know, going in a direction that for today, Ben, what my research has shown me is we just haven't been reading the definitions correctly on a lot of things. And about 4 weeks ago, I came across, for some reason, I was looking at an affidavit. And so I said, well, let me go look at the definition again. And this is what Bouvier says. An affidavit, an oath or affirmation reduced to writing, sworn or affirmed to before some officer who has authority to administer it. All right. So what that's saying is somebody has to give you an oath for it to be an affidavit. And so I went into an older notary handbook that I had found online from the 1850s or something, and I'm reading in there. And a lot of these books, when you look at them, they'll have the original text will be at the top in whatever font it is. And then they have all this stuff at the bottom that's, you know, smaller. I've come to realize that's the read between the lines stuff. And in this read between the lines in this notary handbook, it said if an instrument says it's an affidavit, but an oath hasn't been administered, it's not an affidavit. They can't make it any plainer than that, brother. If you don't have a frickin' oath when you do your affidavit, you don't have an affidavit.
Hang on, let me just see if I understand here, because it's my understanding that an affidavit is only submittable as evidence into a court case if it's been sworn in front of a notary, because the notary is a public official. It's like they're an officer of the court, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
They are definitely, they're a justice of the peace. That's what they are.
Right. So
they have the same office as a Supreme Court justice. They're all justices of the peace.
Right. So if you swear your affidavit in front of a notary, it's as if you're there in person swearing it in front of the court, right?
Right. Well, yeah, you've gone to a court and sworn an oath. The notary is you know this from Bill Thornton stuff, right? You are the tribunal of the court of record. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you've just taken your court to one of their people.
Yeah.
You know, and you're holding your court in their office.
I see. Hang on, but just tell me the phrase, the exact phrase you said was, what did it say in the book exactly? It says that the affidavit has to be,
you mean out of Bouvier's? Okay, this is the definition of affidavit, out of Bouvier's. An oath or affirmation reduced to writing, sworn or affirmed to before some officer who has authority to administer it. Somebody has to administer you an oath, right? And so if you haven't done that, just because your paperwork says it's an affidavit, if there's not evidence on there that you've done this under oath, then it's not an affidavit.
Well, hang on a second there, Rob. I'm not disagreeing, but let me just tell you the way I see it and see what you're.
Well, you wouldn't be disagreeing with me. You would be disagreeing with Bouvier's.
Okay. Well.
Okay. So it's not me you're disagreeing with. I'm just reading what he said.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Well, let me just tell you the way I look at this and see what you think. The oath. We can declare a bunch of facts. We can write an affidavit and write our own oath, but generally. Generally, an affidavit is done, like you say, in front of a notary who is like an official witness of your affirmation, right?
That's correct.
So the oath itself is still an oath, even if we do it on our own with no witness, but it's not submittable as evidence. It ordinarily is done in front of a notary in order so that it can be used and submitted as evidence. Am I right, what I just said?
Well, yeah, if you want to use it as evidence, you have to take an oath in front of a notary, period.
Okay,
you know?
So here's the bit I don't necessarily agree with you on. If you do it on your own without a notary, it's still an affidavit, it's still an oath, but you might not be able to submit it as evidence.
The idea is, you know, do you want it to have any effect in their court or not, right?
Sure,
If you do, you need to make it evidence. And to take an oath, right, you have to, somebody has to give you an oath, and you say, yeah, you know, whatever that is.
Hang on. I think that's the point that I'm disagreeing with you on. I think, from my perspective, you can write your own oath, but the whole point is, with the notary, is that he's witnessing it and making it official, right? So you don't need them for your oath. You can write your own oath, but it might not be any use for anything.
Well, I'm not disagreeing that the words in the oath can be whatever's decided, right? But the notary has to give it to you, and you have to swear or affirm that, yes, you know, to the oath.
Yeah, right? But it's the fact they're witnessing it is the crucial point.
Right. They're going to ask you those words, and you're going to say yes, all right?
Got it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
all right. If I was doing an affidavit, I would write the oath right in the affidavit, that this is the oath that the notary has given me. You know, put the words on there, right?
Okay, yeah.
But, see, since you've done that correctly, she's going to put a certificate on there.
Right.
You know, that's what notaries do. They have different kinds of certificates depending on the notary act that they're doing, right? So a certificate is a writing made in any court and properly authenticated to give notice to another court of anything done therein.
Right.
So that certificate just says that you've come in and you have been a witness yourself, and she's witnessed you as the witness, right?
Yeah.
Because when you take an oath, you're saying that what you're saying is true in the eyes of the Creator.
Yes.
Okay. You know, as a man. So only a man can take an oath, right? A person cannot.
Right. Okay.
So if you're a defendant in a court case, you're getting off track a little bit here, right? Yeah. You're there as a person. But if they want you to be a witness for that little bit of time, you know, they allow you to be a witness and they steer you into doing false witness against yourself, right? They would just assume you didn't say anything and just went along with the presumptions. But So the only one who's acting as a man in a courtroom is a witness, and they put him in his own box. You know, you go on the witness stand, right? You're not down where the defendant is. You're not in all these other places in the court. Everything in there has a reason for being there, and they put you in the witness stand. They put on a kind of certificate. Now, that's for an affidavit where you're swearing that these facts are true. I'm not a big fan of doing affidavits myself. I had done them, and I wonder why they didn't work. Well, now I realize I didn't do it correctly.
Oh, I see. And what do you mean? What do you mean there?
Well, I didn't have it done under oath. I don't know anybody that I've talked to who's ever done an affidavit and taken it to a notary and had them administer them an oath.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
They've never done it, you know, so therefore they did not have an affidavit, and that's why they didn't pay any attention to it in their court.
Hold on. I think that's the distinction I seem to be disagreeing with you on. It is an affidavit, but it's not submittable as evidence because it wasn't witnessed by an officer of the court, otherwise known as a notary.
Okay, well then it says it is, but it isn't because it wasn't done under oath. That's the definition of an affidavit. It's been done under oath.
Okay.
Just because the word says it is doesn't make it so, right? It has to be done under oath to be an affidavit.
So you're saying the oath has to... So you're saying if it's not done with a notary, then it's not an oath. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, The definition of Bouvier's has to be done in front of an officer who can take an oath, right? And so if you look at the definition of a notary, they're allowed to take oaths or administer oaths,
yeah,
right?
I see what you mean, Rob. What you mean.
So just this week, in fact, I sent you a copy, a guy out in Utah, you know, he had some traffic thing, and he did a couple of different affidavits, and I don't agree at all with what the words were that he used on there. He called himself an executor and a beneficiary, and those are persons, and you know, I don't, if I can't be a man, it doesn't apply to me, so I can't be the executor or the beneficiary. But nevertheless, he did it under oath, and he had this seal on it, right? Now that seal that notary puts on has power. Hmm. When you don't have them administer you an oath, all they're doing is witnessing your signature, right? And who uses writing? It's just the person, right? When you do it as an oath, it's the same as if you had been in court, but you're not there taking an oath. You're doing it in front of this justice of the peace, right? And they're certifying that you took an oath.
So wait a second. So there's a difference between taking an oath and just somebody witnessing your signature. Is that what you're saying?
The biggest difference in the world, brother. One is what a person would do, and the other one's what a man would do.
Okay, I don't quite understand. Would you expand on that a little bit and just tell us what the difference there is?
Well, brother, if you go there merely to have them witness your signature, right? Did they give you an oath? No. Therefore, you didn't do an affidavit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. Right? I'm with you. Okay.
And when you do an affidavit, you're doing it as an oath, you know, reduced to writing. And you're saying that you swear that these facts in this piece of paper are true.
Okay. Okay. I don't understand. So why? I don't understand why that's different from you signing. So the oath's at the bottom of your affidavit. You sign it. Why is it, if they're witnessing your signature, what's the difference? I don't understand.
Well, the difference is that according to Blackstone's, which is an authoritative book on law, and look up Book of Authority, Google that sometime and go to Wikipedia, and they'll say all these books listed below, if entered into your case as evidence, is the law, period.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to go with what he says. And he says common law, small c, common law, is the unwritten law of reason. Mm. That's where the maxims of law come from, right? Before they were written, they were just known, right? Eventually, they got put on paper, but it's not the paper that gives them strength. It's the fact that they're a maxim, right? So it's the unwritten law of reason. What's reasonable between two men?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, that's what you're trying to get to is the status of a man. Well, only a man can take an oath. So if you take an oath, you've been recognized as a man instead of a person. Okay. Where if they just witness your signature, they're just witnessing that a person came in and signed his name.
I see. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, there's a whole level of difference, brother. That's the thing. So, again, this guy that did these two, I don't agree with the words, but he did them under oath, right? And it was for a traffic citation. He listed whatever he listed as his reasons for that. That you know, it didn't apply to him. And they dismissed the case. He never went to court. You know, they just dismissed it, and you know, and so there was that 3-page verification of affidavit or something like that that I sent out, and if you don't have it, I'll send it to you again. But you know, it was just showing that if it was done properly, they would dismiss the case.
Yeah, right. It's very cool. It's great to see, you know, when a court dismisses a thing against you. It's just really cool, isn't it?
Yeah. but you know, dismissed is the wrong thing. You want to have it discharged. Somebody brought a charge, and according to Bouvier's, the correct thing to do is have it discharged.
Okay.
You know, when it's dismissed, it's just out there in limbo somewhere. It didn't really go away. It's just nobody's paying the bill.
What about with prejudice?
Well, I'm going to go with what Bouvier says. You know, I'm not parsing words. I'm going to use what it says. It says the correct thing to do with a charge is to discharge it.
Okay.
So I want it discharged because I know that word exists. You know, it exists.
Yeah.
So when you do that, if somebody brought a charge against you, your all capital letter name, right? Mm. And then you say that, you know, in your affidavit that whatever your reason is, they can't, and therefore this must be discharged. Well, then they have to pay the bill.
Mm.
It doesn't go to limbo against, you know, when it's in limbo, it's still against your all capital letter name.
Right.
And, you know, I have my own ideas of what that is, but, you know, that's really for another topic. That this is stuff that anybody could use with stuff they're doing today. It doesn't matter if you're trying to do it in commerce or statute law or whatever. You know, if you thought you did an affidavit before and you didn't have an oath administered, you did not do an affidavit.
Yeah.
And therefore, if they walked all of your paperwork, you can't be upset. You didn't do it properly. Right? It's you who did not do it correctly.
Yeah. So just going back to the example of the guy that we just spoke about, when he did his affidavit, and like you said, he did it properly with a notary and all that, and what did he do with it exactly? Did he file it? Did he send it to the other party or what?
Yeah, well, I believe he sent it back to the court, right? This was already a traffic citation he had. I would have to go back and look and see who he addressed it to, right? But I believe it was back to the clerk of the courts, because that's where the letter came from, was from the court saying that, you know, he had no more responsibility in this case or charge or whatever the hell it was, you know? So he got the letter back from the court.
So let's just say, hypothetically, if you received a traffic ticket through the mail that said, you know, $50 for speeding or whatever, what would you be looking to do with it? What would you do?
I wouldn't be doing an affidavit on anything. And, you know, instead of picking that as an example, let's just talk about what you might do, because you can do this for anything, right? So anybody brings a charge against your all capital letter name, whether it's a bank, a court case or whatever, you know, they're always charging the all capital letter name, right? So in commerce, they have a thing called a counterclaim. Many people have tried counterclaims before, right? At least I have. Look, I've done all sorts of things. And in fact, as I told you, I had an hour and a half interview with two Treasury agents, you know, not over things I did. I actually asked them to come because I wanted the IRS to give me an audit, and they wouldn't do it. So I got a hold of the Inspector General of the Treasury saying, hey, I can't get the IRS to give me an audit. You know, what the hell's going on? And he had a couple Treasury agents call me. You know, that's a whole nother story. That's what led me on this path that I'm on now. When I said, well, I walked out of there, I admitted to doing $200,000 worth of instruments and said, yeah, I did them all as a man. And, you know, brother, you don't have any jurisdiction.
But hang on, just tell us a bit about that then, Rob. So what happened there?
Well, you know, I had been listening to Gene Keating. This was back last December, right? And he was talking about the IRS manual 6209. And in that manual, it has all the forms and so forth that are used by the IRS, going down in a column, right? And then across in rows are different attributes for them. Well, one of those columns that come out of those rows is what class of tax that these forms apply to. And so in America, people are used to W-2s, 1099s, W-4s, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they're all listed as Class 5 gift and estate. They're not listed as income. It says right in their own book they're Class 5 gift and estate. Mm-hmm. And gift and estate has a $360,000 a year exemption.
Oh.
Okay, so I said, hey, I wrote the IRS, mistake of fact. I filled the forms out incorrectly. I would like to redo them, you know. And the mistake goes back to the first instance of the mistake, according to the UCC, right? I just want to amend the forms so that they're done properly, you know. Please come and give me an audit.
Right.
So I sent it to one office, and they didn't respond. I sent it to another one, they didn't respond. And when you're doing this stuff, the worst thing is when nobody responds. So then I wrote the Inspector General of the Treasury. And, you know, I told him my problem. Well, he had a Treasury agent call me. And, you know, And he said, so the treasury agent calls. His name is John. And he says, you know, who he is. And he said, I'm glad to hear from you, John. Thanks for calling me. And he said, look, we got this request from you to the inspector general. We'd like to talk to you about it. You know, is there any chance you can come down to our office in Grand Rapids? I live in Michigan. They have an office in Grand Rapids. And I thought, so, you know, I really don't want to go to a federal building. You know, that's in their ballpark. And I said, well, it'd be a lot easier if you came here. He said, yeah, but it, you know, it'd be easier for us if you came to us. You know, I said, well, yeah, but John, who's getting paid for this? You know, come on out and I'll be happy to talk to you. And so he agreed, and the next day they're driving out, and he stopped. There's a little diner about a quarter mile down the road, and he stopped there, and he called me from there. I said, hey, my partner had to go to the bathroom. We're going to have a cup of coffee. Why don't you come down here and meet us? And so, you know, I thought about it. So, okay, you know, he doesn't want to come to my house. He doesn't know if there's a nutter living here. So I agreed to, and I walked down over. And as I was walking, I was thinking, well, what are you going to say, Bob, when you meet this man? And I had heard a few days before that, you know, when you shake people's hands, that could be consenting to jurisdiction, right? So I said, I want to make sure that gets put into the conversation right away. You know, long story short, I walk in. There he is. His partner's still in the bathroom. It'd been 10 minutes, so, you know, he either had to go really bad or he's in there for a reason, you know. But it's too late. I'm in the door. What am I going to do, you know? So so I walk over to John, and I shake his hand, and I said, you know, for the record, John, some people consider shaking hands consenting to jurisdiction. But in this case, that's not the case, right? Or in this instance, that's not the case. And he didn't let go of my hand, but he looked at me, you know, not funny or with a lot of surprise. But he said to me, he said, but cannot two men exchange pleasantries? And I said, well, yeah, John, two men can, but two persons can't. Right. And so I had already been, now knowing what I know now, I had already been accepted as a man. And they were going to see if they could get me out of that position. Right. And so, so we went over why I had gotten a hold of you know, the IRS, and he said, well, you know, a lot of people are in jail for trying to, you know, not pay their taxes. And I said, well, John, how can that be me? I called for an audit. You know, how many people do you get calling for an audit? You know, I just want to amend my forms. I made a mistake, you know, mistake of fact. And then he said, so you're not afraid of being arrested? And I said, well, John, you can't arrest me. I'm not a commodity. You know, I'm an immortal living spirit created in the image of God, and I'm here as one of his people. And, you know, brother, you don't have any jurisdiction. I said, you can come and trespass my property, shoot my dog, kick my door down, scare my kids, and kidnap me. But, you know, you can't arrest me. I'm not a commodity. You know, and so we had this very, 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 you know, I don't think many people have this kind of conversation with two treasury agents, but, you know, during it, he said three different times, said, this is the most intelligent explanation I've ever heard for why a man believes what he believes. All right. So, you know, I knew I was on to something. I just didn't know what it was. And so in this, before this, I had sent a money order to the to a utility after a couple other contracts. And it looked like they wanted to have legal tender. I said, okay, I want legal tender. I'll send you a money order. And my bill was for $450, and I made it up for $2,000. I said, you know, just send me a check for the rest, you know. Because to me, they're all banks, right? They're just banks. They're going to monetize it anyway. So just give me some and go ahead and monetize it.
Who did you draw it on? Sorry to interrupt. Who did you draw it on?
On the Treasury. You know,
directly on the Treasury?
Who knows if I did it right, man? You know, I was just following what I'd seen in a book someplace, right? Right. To me, it's all just paper and fiction. I really didn't care. It says that I can do a money order, you know, that's legal tender. Or I could do a promissory note. You know, they're all legal tender, right? So, anyways, the utility company ended up sending that to a federal prosecutor. And they sent me a copy of what they sent him. And, you know, so I responded to the federal prosecutor that, brother, it looks like Consumers Energy is trying to draw you into a private contract. You know, they've accepted my payment, never returned it. Therefore, there is no debt. I'd just like to know where my check is. And, you know, if what they've sent you or me is a complete copy of what they sent you, you know, it was just the money order and maybe one piece of paper. I said, you don't have a complete copy of the record. And I'm not going to send it to you and draw you into this. So if you need it, get it from them, you know. But if you decide to get involved, I need an affidavit, you know, and all the stuff that people say to do, you know, make it do an affidavit and so forth, you know, that, proving they have any jurisdiction over the maxims of law, or their right to interfere in my private contracting. Hmm. So I never heard from him, right? Now, that would have been like 3 or 4 months before this. But during this conversation with the two Treasury agents, he pulls out, you know, we get on talking about the IRS thing. And so I told him what I had done, right? I pretty much told him the story, the whole story with the utility, and that I had sent him a money order. And, you know, I told him, I sent him a money order, man. They never sent it back. I like to know where my check is. And he pulls out of an envelope, and I see there's a whole bunch of pieces of paper in there. I said, oh, they got a little file on me going here. And he says, well, is this your money order? And, of course, it's a copy of what I had sent to the treasurer or to the utility, right?
Yeah.
And so I look at it, and I look at John in the eye. I say, well, no, John, this is a counterfeit. Mine had a blue ink signature on it. You know, again, it was accepted for payment. I want to know where my check is. Can you help me? And so he said, so his partner piped up. He said, well, why is that a counterfeit? And I said, well, look, it's a full-size copy of a negotiable instrument. If I did that with a $20 bill, you'd be chasing me all over America. You know, why can they do this? You know, so, you know, and then we got off of that, and, you know, we went on to whatever else we went on to. And, you know, 3 cups of coffee in an hour and a half. I asked a lot of questions. I answered all theirs, and I came home. You know, so.
And what was the upshot? What was there anything after that from them?
Yeah, well, no, I never heard from them. But the utility company eventually did come out and turn my power off.
Right.
Right. And it's like, well, the next thing you're supposed to do is lien them, right? And so I'm not going to lien anybody. You know, that just doesn't sound right to me. And, you know, I could pay the bill. It was all a test, right, to see if I was going to get them to abide by the contract I thought I had. Well, of course, I did it as an affidavit to them at the time, or a counterclaim, actually. And now I know I hadn't done that right, because that's the next thing we need to talk about. If you do, you know, if you call it a counterclaim or a notice or notice for validation of debt or whatever you call it, you're doing that of your free will act and deed, right? Nobody's making you write this. You're sitting there doing it on your own, right? So you're using your free will to do an act or deed. And deed has many definitions, but in this case, it's just your action, right? Mm. Well, when you do that, you still want to go to the notary, and you want to have the notary acknowledge it. They do an acknowledgement. And from Bouvier's, the act of the grantor going before a competent officer and declaring the instrument to be his act or deed and desiring the same to be recorded as such. Okay, so, you know, I've created this, and I want to go before a notary and just tell them I've done this in my free will act and deed. Mm. Okay, so back to, let's say you have a foreclosure, right? They're coming, they say you owe $100,000, and they want to be paid, right? Whatever that is. There's a case number, or there's a file number, or there's something attached to that. So, you know, you would just respond back to the person that sent it with your free will act and deed and an acknowledgement certificate saying that, you know, to me, the all capital letter name is the name of a landed, L-A-N-D-E-D, landed estate carved from the larger estate that was given to each and every immortal living soul by the Creator. He gave you an inheritance in land and tenements. This is all out of Blackstone's, right? So when I write something, if I'm writing, I'm telling them that I am Robert Allen, my first and middle name, given an indefeasible title in my land from the Father or the Creator, and I'm the lawful owner of the all capital letter name landed estate, right? So I call it my property, right? So as a man, if you're bringing a charge against my property, only a man can do that, and therefore I need from you on an affidavit done before a competent officer, just like we're supposed to do, that's where you need to put your charge. You have to do it under oath, right? If you're going to charge me as a man, you have to go under oath and bring forth two witnesses that I've harmed you or your property, or there is no charge. That's what common law says, right? Only a man can bring a claim against a man, and to do so, he has to take an oath that I've harmed him, and he has to bring forth two witnesses that say, yes, we saw it happen.
Yeah.
if he doesn't do that, then, you know, you as the defendant or the one being charged, there is no charge.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're doing now, saying, okay, this is my property, and if you want to bring a charge against it, you need to do it on an affidavit under penalty of perjury. Well, first of all, they can never do that.
Hmm.
Okay. So the second thing you say then is, you know, if you refuse to do an affidavit under oath administered by a judicial officer, then me, demand that the case be immediately discharged.
Yeah.
A failure to do either could be construed as warring against the Constitution and maybe treason. And we'll get into why that is right now. And really, that's all I'm going to tell them on that piece of paper. I'm going to take that down to a notary and say, I want an acknowledgement done on this, right? And I'll just read you what an acknowledgement statement says. It's really short, sweet, and but it depends on where you are, what the words are going to be. So in Michigan, it would be state of Michigan, county of, right, and then whatever county you're in. On this, whatever day it is, before me, the subscriber, and then the notary would sign their name or print their name, right? They're the subscriber. So before me, the subscriber, personally appeared Robert Allen, to me known to be the living man described in and who executed the foregoing instrument and acknowledged before me that he executed the same as his free will act and deed. Right? So this isn't a jurat certificate. This is an acknowledgement certificate. And that's what notaries do. They put certificates on documents.
So what's the difference from a jurat and an acknowledgement?
Well, the one is under oath, right? I'm not taking an oath. I'm just saying I did this in my free will act and deed, right? And on there, I'm not stating any facts. I'm rebutting presumptions or stating my own presumptions. I'm presuming that I own the all capital letter name as the legal or the lawful owner, mm-hmm. right? So I have both titles. I have equitable and legal title. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you want to bring a claim against that all capital letter name, you need to do it on an affidavit because I'm doing it as a man and that's my property. And if you're putting a charge against my property, you need to step forward and take an oath. I don't need to take the oath. I didn't bring the charge. You know, so I'm not defending my position, right? That's what you're doing with an affidavit. You're coming back with your facts to substantiate your side, right? I have nothing to substantiate. They brought the charge. They have to provide the proof.
Hmm. Yeah. I still don't understand the difference from a jurat, an acknowledgement, and an oath.
Well, I'll try it again, Ben.
Okay.
Right? An oath is you swearing before somebody to the Creator that what you said is true.
Yeah.
Okay. That seems pretty simple, right? A jurat is the certificate that's put on when you do an affidavit. It's the name of a certificate.
Right.
Okay. An acknowledgement is the name of another certificate.
Right.
The jurat is used when you take an oath. The acknowledgement one is used when you just do it of your free will, act, and deed.
But an oath. So is there an oath on a jurat and an acknowledgement?
No, there's no oath on an acknowledgement, right? All they're doing is certifying that you've come in and said, look, I created this document, this instrument of my free will act and deed, right? I'm not swearing that anything on there is true. I'm just saying that I did it of my free will act and deed. Hmm. Where on an affidavit, you're swearing that the words in the paper are true. Right? That there's the difference. An affidavit, you're saying what's on there is true. Mm. On an acknowledgement, all you're saying is that you wrote this instrument of your free will act and deed.
Okay.
And you're going to put on there, if somebody's brought a charge against you, well, okay, if you did, then put it on an affidavit.
Okay.
If you won't, then there is no charge.
Mm, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the idea of commerce, right? With a counterclaim. Right. If somebody sends something to you, you're saying, well, put it on an affidavit.
Yeah.
But if you refuse to, then there is no charge. Right. Now, so this is a counterclaim. And nobody that I know of has ever taken a counterclaim and to a notary. And if you do, it adds a hell of a lot more power to it.
Hmm.
Because you just have a judicial officer to say that, you know, that they've agreed with what's on that piece of paper.
Hmm. When you say a counterclaim's in commerce, is that what you said?
Yeah, you know, whatever Gordon Hall would call it, or you know, creditors and commerce, whatever the words would be. When, you know, when somebody sends you a bill, what are you supposed to do with it? Right? You got to do something with it. So it isn't a counterclaim that one of the things that you could do with it?
But in a common law lawsuit, you could counterclaim, couldn't you?
Well, that's what we're doing. We're doing this in common law. We're doing it as men. As somebody thinks they have a charge against my, you know, what I consider my lawful property.
Okay.
All right, that the all capital letter name, that I own that. That, you know, I have the right to use, right to enjoy, right to dispose of.
Yeah.
That's what ownership means, right? So if you want to bring a claim against it, you need to do it on an affidavit, because only a man can bring a claim against a man. Mm. A corporation can't bring a claim against a man. They don't have the status. Mm. Right? Man is the highest status you can have, because man is created in the image of God.
So from, so what's the person then? Because I can't really get a clear understanding on this idea of person. What does it mean to you?
Well, when you look at Blackstone's commentaries on English law, it has, he talks about everything he talks about. And then he's going to get ready and talk about English common law, right? Which is an inferior form of common law because it has statutes involved in it. Doesn't mean it doesn't follow common law. They're just trying to put it in statute.
Hold on a second. So what's the difference? I don't understand. What's real common law then?
Well, the unwritten law of reason, brother.
Right.
It's not written down.
Oh, I see.
It's what's ever reasonable.
Hang on. Let's just clarify this, because this is the new concept. So you're saying...
Blackstone's a saying. I'm not saying. I'm telling you what Blackstone says, who's an authoritative book on law. Brought in any court in the world is the law. So I'm going to go with what he says.
Okay. So what's the difference? There's two types of common law, he's saying, is there?
Well, there's all sorts of law, man. Right? I mean, there's statute law. There's civil law. There's canon law.
But what was
there's
that?
English common law. Well,
the distinction you just talked about.
Yeah, well, Blackstone said that common law, small c, common law, nothing else, nothing modified, just common law, is the unwritten law of reason.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not written down, brother.
Okay. And then.
So if it isn't written down, it must be spoken. Only a man can speak. Paper can't speak.
So what was that other type of common law then?
Well, English common law, which you guys are under, you know, or you think you're under if you believe you're under English common law, right? By the mere fact it has English before common law makes it inferior to common law. That Blackstone goes through the structures of law. And he says common law, small c, that the unwritten law of reason comes from the Bible.
Right, and, okay.
As in, this is what Jesus did compared to civil law, which is the other side. This is what the Romans did. And so in the Bible, you have these two paths of law that go through, one being the law of man and the other one being the law of civil persons.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean. Right. I wasn't aware of this distinction between this the English common law and the
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Same, you know, that when they say case law, right?
Hmm.
All case law is they went through all the judgments of common law. Now, common law is in courts of record. You understand that from Bill Thornton, right?
Okay.
But really, all they put in the record is what the judgment was,
yeah.
Right? So here's what the charge was, and here's the judgment. They don't have all the shit that happened in between in there. That's all that's in there. So they would look at what the charge was, and then what the remedy was that the court gave, and they made that case law. But it's just a guideline. It doesn't mean you have to do it that way. It's what's reasonable at the time. That's why common law was never written down, because every case is different. But statute law was sold as the idea of putting common law in writing, you know, so that it would all be written down. And Blackstone goes on to say the reason that statute law was invented and added to common law was to add the defect to the common law. Now, I don't know exactly what he means by the defect to the common law, but to me it means to make it, to have errors in it so that they could do what they were going to do, that they're doing to us today, you know, which is what statute law is. If you go into their statute law court, you got a problem. Mm. It's as easy as the definition of a magistrate, Ben. I should find this one myself and post it again, but... a magistrate in law, so in common law, because Common law is the only form of law that can be unmodified as law, according to Blackstone, right? So when it just says law, they're talking common law. So in law, a magistrate may be compelled to perform certain ministerial duties in a particular manner, right? He's not acting as the judge. He's an administrator. And he may be compelled to perform certain ministerial duties in a particular manner. And in law, may means must. Okay. Now, in this definition, that's the first part. Then there's a semicolon, and semicolons are very important in their system. We'll talk about that in a second. But after the semicolon, it says, however, when he sits as the judge, right, he only needs to move the case ahead in a manner of his own judgment. It didn't say anything about following a statute or a code or a law or your piece of paper or anything else, right? If you allow him to sit there as the judge, he only needs to move the case ahead in a matter of his own judgment, period.
In other words, according to his own discretion. Is that a different way of saying it?
According to his own discretion, yes. Okay. Exactly, right? So they tell you in one definition that if you walk in their court, chances are you're going to lose. He just needs to move it ahead in a manner of his own discretion. Now, if you do a really good job, he's going to he'll give you the win, right? But he doesn't have to. He can just postpone it. We'll see you in 6 months, you know, and wear you out. Have you go back and do some more paperwork.
So really, most people in common parlance refer to the guy sat up there on the bench as the judge, when really that's to our detriment. Right.
Yeah. Look, when you go to court, the judge isn't your problem. Mm-hmm. Right. He didn't bring the charge. The plaintiff brought the charge. And so if you're going to go to their court room, you're not going to their court. You're taking yours to them. And you know, stand up, say, on and for the record, I accept the oaths of all officers of this court. You know, I wasn't really ready to talk about this yet, but we probably should. When you say that you accept their oath, right, their oath was written as a common law deed. The grantor is the person taking the oath, and the grantee is the public with a small p, which is the people. But with any contract, right, both parties have to agree. So you have to accept the deed.
Hang on.
So I accept your oath.
Rob, just slow down. I'm not. It's going a bit fast for me. Just kind of give me that a little.
There's lots to know, brother, but it ain't that hard. I'm telling you.
Hang on, give us that last bit again, but just
okay.
Go through
all
it
right.
A little slower.
Okay.
For
well,
us.
Then we need to talk about the oath. See, now we're down another little path, but they all lead to the same point, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
What way we get down them? When they take an oath, right?
Yeah.
If you look up the definition of oath in Bouvier's, there's like 30 different paragraphs in there. And so when they take an oath, it's a promissory oath, right? It's a particular form of oath. It's called a promissory oath, right? And they're doing it as a witness, as a living person, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's done on a deed. Everything that a man does as a living man is done on a deed. Okay, and a deed has a grantor, the person, you know, granting whatever it is, and the grantee, the man granting something, and the grantee being who it's granted to.
Okay.
Right? And so if you look at, so I looked at, I had a chance to see an oath for a coroner, right? Mm-hmm. And it said right on there that the grantor, and it had his name, right? And it said the grantee was the public, okay, with a small p. Okay, so he's granting his oath to the public,
okay,
at large. However, for a deed to be executed, you have to accept the deed. Therefore, you have to accept their oath.
Oh, I see. So if you're in a court and you say, I accept the oath of all, whatever you said.
Yeah, I accept the oath of all officers of this court.
And therefore the deed is executed or something?
The deed has just been executed and now they're all under their oath.
Right, so we need to accept their oaths in order to bring them to life in a way.
Absolutely.
Okay,
right.
All right, I'm kind of with you now, yeah.
Okay, and to go along with Bill Thornton, and, you know, and convening your court of record, right? So you've said, on and for the record, you know, and according to Bill, that's enough to open the court of record, right? So on and for the record, I accept the oaths of all officers of this court. Okay, now that includes the bailiff, the clerk, the judge, the prosecutor. They're all officers of this court, this being theirs, right?
Okay.
You're the tribunal of the court, the one and only. Okay.
So are you distinguishing between the court you just mentioned right then and their court?
Yeah. Theirs is always this.
This court.
This court. Right, right, right. You are always the court. This is just one of many, and the is one and only.
Hang on. Okay. Hang on, Rob. So tell us about that. So what is that? Well, tell us about the difference between those two things.
Okay. This court, right?
Yeah.
This just means one of many courts. This particular court that we're in today is how they look at it, right?
Yeah.
But when you say the court, you know, you're talking about you and your court of record, and it's the one and only one that's there. It only applies to you, right? Where you're only taking care of your own business, right? So you are the court of record.
Okay.
You're the tribunal of the court of record.
Yeah.
And a tribunal's a trinity, right? Well, if man was created in the image of God, and Jesus said, he only had two commandments, right? Honor your father with your heart, mind, and soul. Well, there's a trinity right there. There's your trinity. Your heart, mind, and soul make your trinity. So you are a tribunal as a man, and therefore you're the tribunal of the court of record of your sovereign nation state, which is your body. It's your land. You know, your body isn't you, brother. You're a spirit. You're just inhabiting an earthen vessel that was given to you to be here.
Okay.
It's your land. This is all out of Blackstones, man. I'm telling you.
let's just back up a moment. Could you just clarify the difference between a judge, a magistrate, and, you know, how that relates to the tribunal as well?
Well, yeah. First of all public officers are magistrates.
Okay.
The president of the United States is the chief magistrate of the country, nation, whatever word they use. So he's a magistrate, right? They're all magistrates.
Yeah.
Some are judicial magistrates,
okay,
right? And we call them judge. But the office they hold is as a justice of the peace. They all hold the same office. So the notary holds the same office as a Supreme Court justice. They're all justices of the peace.
Oh, I see. So a notary is a justice of the peace, and
yes,
a Supreme Court justice is a justice of the peace.
Absolutely. And so a seal from a notary is as good as a seal from the Supreme Court, as long as you know that it is.
Okay.
It's from a justice of the peace.
So how does that relate to magistrate and judge, though? I don't see how that fits in.
Well, because they're a judicial magistrate, either they're going to administer the orders of the tribunal.
Yes.
Right? Or they're going to sit in judgment of the case.
Right.
And they sit in judgment over persons and administer when you're a man. They administer the orders of the tribunal of
right.
the man.
Got it. Yeah, this is making sense now, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to, when you say, I'm not going to wait and do this in court, but some people are already there, right? So if you go into court and say, on and for the record, you know, I accept the oaths of all officers of this court, right?
Yeah.
And then you tell them who you are. I'm an immortal living soul created in the image of God. Here is one of his people.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I've said that in open court, right? Are they going to rebut that I am?
No.
Okay. So then if they don't rebut it, I must be, right? Now, people have tried this and they've gotten shut down. Of course, now the judge starts to talk, right? The confession and avoidance mm-hmm. starts, right? That Gordon Hall talks about all the time. And then people get drugged down that rabbit hole. You know, you don't go where they're going. You stay where you are. So go ahead, Ben.
Just a quick question. Yeah. Would you address the guy as judge or not?
No. In fact, the guy I was telling you about last night from Liverpool, right? On his second day, he had the second highest judge of Liverpool hearing his case. And he only ever called him the magistrate.
Right. So by calling in the judge, it's almost like we're granting him discretion to treat us
right.
as a person type of thing.
Right.
So
he's an honorable magistrate as far as I'm concerned, because I've accepted his oath. I have no problem with him. He didn't bring the charge, you know.
Right. So I have to kind of periodically kind of put this in my own words so I can try and understand it. So
that's cool.
To boil it down. So we want him to be a magistrate Or in other words, a different word for that is administrator, right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All magistrates are administrators of one kind or another, right? So,
or you could call him a justice of the peace, could you?
If you want to, sure.
Okay, but we definitely don't want to call him judge, because that implies he's got discretion to do whatever he wants.
Right, got yeah.
It. Okay.
Or whatever other word they want you to use for his, you know, your honor or whatever. And I'll call him an honorable magistrate. You know, honorable magistrate, I accept your oath and the oath of all other officers of this court. Mm. I'm an immortal living spirit, created the image of God here as one of the people, given an indefeasible title in my land, and lawful owner of whatever your all capital letter name is, right? That's who you tell them who you are, right? I am the lawful owner of the all capital letter name, and I demand the plaintiff take an oath.
Yeah.
And bring forth two witnesses to substantiate his claim or his charge, or there is no charge.
So do you consider the all capital name to be an entity, a legal entity?
It's the name. Well, yeah, it's the name of an estate.
Right, it's the name of an estate.
Less than inheritance is estate. When you were born, you were given this land and tenements from the Creator. But yeah. You're an infant, and you can't own land. And your parents had never done their thing they needed to do to say that they were alive, so they're considered dead, right? So they have to appoint you a guardian ad litem. And so now he has a legal title over your land, right? And his job is to build your estate for you.
Who does? Who?
Whoever the guardian ad litem is, right?
But who's
don't
that?
Ask me to spell it. I don't know either.
Okay.
I wish I did. Well, I think I know who it is. I think it's the treasurer of the county. But, you know, that I can't really explain that yet. You know, but that's what I'm looking at. That's who this guy is. So this guardian is appointed, right? And now he has legal title to your land. And so then he gives a fee estate to whoever the next level of fiction is, right? Because now we're going into the we're leaving common law and going into fiction, man. You know, we're crossing it across the mirror. And what he does is he doesn't lease the land. He leases what's called the tenements, right?
And, what's that?
Well, brother, the easiest way to explain it, it's the fiction, right? The offices, the franchises, the ability to create cash, all these things out of paper, you know, whatever they have in their system came from us on a lease.
I'm a bit lost, Rob.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I'm saying. This is a lot deeper into something than I'm happy to talk about, but it would be starting at the right point to start there, you know. And what I really want to talk about is getting back to the acknowledgement, you know.
Okay.
We got to get back to this because we're not quite done.
Okay.
Right? So you do your counterclaim however you want to, and you just tell them to put their claim on an they have to put it on an affidavit, you know, under penalty of perjury, which is the same as saying under oath, right? Mm-hmm. Or there is no claim and you demand it to be discharged. And you go down to the notary and you have that little short thing put on. And, you know, this stuff is easy to find. Look in a notary handbook, you know, and it'll tell you the kind of words you're supposed to use. But the substantive words are when you put on there that you've executed of your own free will, act, and deed. Right? So this is earlier in this recording, so I'm not going to, you know, read this thing again. But it's just real short and simple. Okay, so the notary does her thing, right? So now on an affidavit, if you've done that, or if you've done this notice, or whatever you want to call it, either case, you still have a notary seal on it, right? That's called half proof, H-A-L-F, half proof. That's enough proof for a private court, which is their courts. And so when you submit that kind of paperwork, they can't get over the hurdle of evidence. Your evidence is higher than this. You have the record, brother. You know, it's all about creating the record, right? So you have the record properly done, and now they have to answer at the same, you know, level, right? They just can't have a piece of paper now that doesn't meet the criteria that you've asked for because you've done yours in a particular manner. And now, it's private evidence. You have the private record.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm a little bit confused, Rob. It's kind of partly making sense, but I kind of lose the thread. So,
well, do you understand what? Do you understand the part about the affidavit under oath, getting a seal?
Yeah.
Your notice or your demand, whatever else, you're going to do the same thing. But your certificate's going to be called an acknowledgement certificate. At the end of the day, it's different words, has a notary seal. Okay? That's all these are. They're just two different forms of documents. Okay. One you're doing under oath, the other one you're doing as your free will act and deed.
So I don't understand what in this scenario, what are we trying to achieve? I don't quite understand what we're doing.
Well, I'm trying to get there, brother. So okay. So we got these seals on them, right?
On what? I don't know on what.
On the certificate from the notary. The notary has put their stamp or seal or whatever it is on our document.
What's our documents? I don't understand. I'm not following.
Well, it's either an affidavit, brother, that you've done, right?
Okay.
It's either an affidavit or it's your free will act and deed where you've said, look, you're bringing a charge against my property. I demand you put it on an affidavit. You demand that they do it.
So you're demanding that they put their charge on an affidavit?
Yes.
So
if they refuse to do so, then you demand it be discharged. You know, what's so hard to understand about that? Either put in an affidavit or there is no claim, so discharge it.
Okay, so how do you make that request to them?
Well, on this piece of paper. I just told them what I wanted to do. So now I have one seal from the notary, okay? Now, all notaries have a commission. Right, that they have a commission that they've taken an oath to hold that position, and that oath is registered somewhere. Right, in Michigan, it's registered with the county clerk. So I can now take my document to the county clerk and say, "Hey, this notary did this. Right, would you certify that she's in your book? Right, that she has an oath on file. Right."
Right.
And then they give you another certificate that says that they do.
Right. So you're going to the notary's boss and getting verification that the notary's seal is valid.
Yeah. And in England, it's called the Court of... it's in Westminster Abbey. I was talking to you last night about this.
Yeah.
It'll come to me.
So why do we want to do that then?
Well, because when you do that, you've just had what's called an authentication done, which is an attestation, right? A witness. Hmm. So attestation, just another word for witness. A witness made by a proper officer by which he certifies that a record in due form of law is in due form of law, and that the person who certifies it is an officer appointed by law to do so. So when the notary put her seal on it, you had just created a record, right? Now it's a private record. And now you want to take it to the notary's boss. That's a good term for it, right? To the notary's boss to say, hey, was this person able to do that? That the notary's boss would be the proper officer. So a witness by the notary's boss, by which he certifies that the record, you know, and the record is the document you have with the one seal on it, is in due form of law. Comma, and that the person who certifies it is, so the notary who said that it was in due, was a record, is appointed by law to do so. So again, appointed by law, they go and look, yep, the guy has an oath on file, so he's been appointed by law to put the seal on it, and we're certifying that now that this record is in due form of law. And due form of law is a very, very powerful term, brother. They're saying that it meets the criteria of common law. And so when I had this second certificate done on a document I did, when they put their seal on it, it was from the court of record of the county. Right? That's the seal that's on there. So a court of record has said that my document meets the due form of law, and that's a judgment from a court of record. And a judgment from a court of record is binding on all courts of record around the world. And what you've done now, instead of having half proof, you just created what's called full proof, or a public record.
So the notary alone is just half proof, is it?
The notary alone is half proof, right. And when you get her, and all you're doing is having her oath attested to, right? But these people aren't even looking, the second one, they're not even looking at your paperwork. They're just looking to see if the guy that did this, you know, is in the book, is having an oath. And if he is, they give you the certificate.
And then that's foolproof.
Right. When you attach it to your document, it makes it what's called full proof, right?
Okay.
All right. And this is what, so now it's been authenticated, okay?
Okay.
So back to Bouvier's. The Constitution of the U.S., Article 4, Section 1, declares, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. All right? So you just did a public act, right? If that's what you call your original document, your free will act and deed, you've had one seal put on by the notary, had that attested to by her boss, and now it meets the criteria to be considered full faith and credit by the government of the republic. And it's the highest form of proof there is. There's no other evidence higher than that, than something with two seals on it.
Right.
So when you do that, brother, they're not going to be able to touch your paperwork. They're going to have to do whatever that piece of paper told them to, because you gave them a judgment from your court of record.
Right. What, you gave them an order from your court of record?
Yeah, right. You said either put it on an affidavit or discharge it. That's your two choices. Right?
Right.
Okay. That's an order from your court of record that went through the public-private window called the notary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what they're there for, is to take your private document and get it into the public system,
mm-hmm.
which was then certified or attested to by a court in that system to be the due form of law for their system, and it's the highest level of evidence that you can have in their system.
Right. Okay.
Public record, right? And they're not going to touch that, man. So anyways, that's where all this has led to just over the last couple of weeks, you know, and now some people are trying it, and we're going to see what happens. You know, they're seeing that there could be some power in this. And Court of Faculties, that's what the place is in Westminster Abbey.
Okay. You know? So over there in the U.S., what was it, the notary's boss, what do you call that office? I've forgotten.
Well, it's different in every state, or could be, right? In Michigan,
yeah.
You go to the county clerk to have a notary act certified, right? The notary performed an act by doing her certificate, and I just want to have that certified, and so I go to the county clerk.
Okay.
Right? So I walked in there and said, hey, I'd like to have this notary act certified. And the lady says, we do that. I said, but just a minute. And she's digging around the drawer. She says, we hardly ever get asked this. I got to find the instructions on how to do this, you
right.
know.
Okay.
Now, to me, that's very, very important, brother, because a lot of people haven't done this, so maybe that's part of the problem, right, that nobody's ever done this. But according to the dictionary, you're supposed to, you know.
So, okay, yeah, I'm starting to get a grip on this now a bit. So if you were going to do an affidavit, you'd do it with a notary, then you'd go to the other one and get the other thing, and then that makes it foolproof instead of just half proof.
Yeah.
And then because of that, it's so when you're going to send that to the opposing party, are you?
Absolutely.
Right. Are you going to file that into the court record as well, or what?
Well, if there's a court case, yeah, that you would file in the court record too. Right. Right.
Okay. And okay. Right.
See, what you're trying to do, Ben, is you're trying to produce a public record or a public judgment or a public act. And this is a small p public. And if you look at what public is, it's the people, right? This is an order from a people.
Okay.
One of the people, not we the people, you know, not with a capital P, one of the people, the small p, from my court of record of my nation into their system. And they've authenticated it and said it's due form of law.
So just expand on that, if you would, just the difference between the big P and the little p.
Well, there's this document called the Constitution of the United States of America, right? It says we the people, okay?
Yeah.
All right? So that was a group of people that decided to set up a society called the United States of America. According to law of nations, every man must belong to a society. You can live in the society of nature if you decide, Or if you're going to join another society, whatever their bylaws are, you have to follow. Okay, that's your free will. You have a choice, right? You don't have to belong to any society except the society of nature. Go live on fruits and nuts,
yeah.
Right? But if you want to be in a society of other men, then, you know, you have to agree to a set of rules. So the nation of America, right, is a republic form of government. And all that means is that all sovereign nation states are self-governing. Mm-hmm. Right? So I belong to the nation of America because I am a sovereign nation state and I'm self-governing. That's the only rule there is for the nation of America. The United States of America has a whole constitution of shit. You know?
Hang on. Just one second, Rob. Just let me put you on pause a second. So you're saying there's a difference from the nation of America and the United States of America?
Yeah, everything is first of all, they're all societies, right? A nation is just a society of people who've gotten together and say, we're going to follow this set of bylaws. We agree to it. And by our will, we'll be in your society.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. The Constitution was a group of people who wanted to get together to form their own society, right? And that's we the people, and it has a set of rules in there, right? Well, one of the rules is, you know, that the law of America is the law of the land, and you're the land, so you are the law as a man, okay? And then it has all the other shit that it says in there, but none of that applies to me because I'm not taking an oath to that piece of paper. I didn't agree to it.
Right. Okay, let me hold on a second. Can I just ask you, so do you consider yourself to be one of the people that created the Constitution, or do you consider yourself to be a man, that's like separate from
that? Yes, exactly. The Constitution doesn't apply to me because I didn't take an oath to it, right?
Yeah.
Now, I agreed through my own ignorance to be a United States citizen. Yeah. Right? But I did that by my will. Okay? Well, I'm a king. I can change my will at any time. So says Blackstone's. Right? Everything you do as a king is by your will. So I no longer, by my will, want to be in there. I'm going to go back over and be a people, not a citizen. So I stand above the Constitution. And those who took an oath to the Constitution took it to protect the people, small p, from the belligerents.
Yeah.
All right. Because in their society, you don't have your soul with you. It's only persons, right? You're dead entities. Everyone in that society has taken an oath to operate as a person. And if you've, you know, if you're in there as a citizen, you've agreed to be a person, even though you don't know it.
Mm.
But if you say you're a people, then it doesn't apply to you. They've taken the oath to protect you from the belligerents.
Yeah. The dictionary that you keep mentioning, is it Bouvier's, did you say?
Yeah, Bouvier's, yeah.
Is that online?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's everyone knows who Black's, you know, dictionary. Well, Bouvier's is another law dictionary, and he tends to have longer definitions of things, you know, so there's more to be gleaned.
Is that the 1856?
Yeah, it's like an 1856 or something like that, right?
I think I might have it on my thing. Let me just put it up. So all these words that we're hearing you mention, like person and things like that, we can just look it up on this online booth.
Well, I'm not going to say person is. Authentication, certificate, acknowledgement, those words are.
1828. Yeah. Is it this green one? It's got like a green look to it.
All I have is an online version, brother. So, you know, I don't even know what the book looks like, you know.
Could you give us the web address for it so we can...
Yeah, let me see where this is right here. What I'm going to do is put it in your Skype window.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Because then people can look up these words while they're listening to you and stuff. And
yeah.
Because I'd like to get a clearer understanding of the word person.
Yeah. Now, again, we'll go back to that in just a second here. So I was talking about Blackstone's commentaries, right? When he's talking about English law, and we got kind of sidetracked there. But so in there, he has this big ass chart of all the laws of England, right? It looks like a big ass spider web going off to the right. Well, you know, where does it start? It starts in two columns, right? A column for natural person and a column for individual, okay?
Right.
And if you look at the definition of natural person, you know, in my opinion, it's your body, right? Mm-hmm. Without your conscience, right? It's like you being a cow, a sheep. Okay, that's the natural person. The individual, when you look at that definition, it says in there, born a blank slate, influenced by intellect and education. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, it was born a blank slate, and it's influenced by intellect and education. That's your mind. They don't have any rules for your conscience. That's the only two set. That's where everything goes to, is those two right there. Where's the conscience? You know, they don't have any rules over the conscience. Right? But they have it over persons, mm-hmm. over natural person. And then, of course, they developed artificial person and so forth. But, you know, they have jurisdiction over person.
So do you consider yourself a natural person or not?
No, I'm a man.
You're a man. Brother.
Yeah. I'm an immortal living spirit created in the image of God. Here is one of his people. You know, God created man in his image. You don't have a body. You know, you're a spirit inhabiting the land that he gave you as your inheritance. That, you know, that's your territory. And you have exclusive jurisdiction over your territory, but nothing else.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, you know, we covered lots of different stuff, Ben, and each one has its own little leg that led to this. But my main thing is I just wanted to get out to people that are doing whatever paperwork they're doing, man. Do it right and get the seals on them. Hmm. And they'll have a lot more power. If you're doing an affidavit, make sure they give you an oath. You know, if you're doing a counterclaim, make sure that it has an acknowledgement done on it. You know, in either case, they're just doing a certificate. Even though the words are written on your paperwork, but by them putting on their seal, they did a certificate, either a jurat certificate or an acknowledgement certificate.
Mm.
And if you take that to the next level up, you've just created a public record with a small p public record act or judgment. And so just recently, because I believe that your body's land and that it's been registered and that this estate's been created, and that it's all controlled at the county level,
mm-hmm.
I sent my judgment for my court of record into their system, claiming my inheritance from the Creator.
Okay.
Right? And that they're, as the lawful officers, they needed that now as the proper owner, I had appeared, which Blackstone says you have to do, the proper owner must appear. I've appeared. Right? So now give me my inheritance. And I just sent that out Wednesday of last week, and you know I don't know if they're going to do with it yet, but all I know is it's in the due form of law according to their own rules.
Mm.
It's got two seals on it, and then I took mine to an office called the Register of Deeds, right, where they handle land, and I had it recorded there.
Mm.
Okay, so it was recorded into the public record.
But isn't that like just registering it with the public again?
Well, I'm just trying to make it a public record. I want the public to know that I have this judgment from their court. Remember, the second seal they put on mine is from their court of record saying that it's in the due form of law. So whatever it says is.
Mm.
They've already agreed to it. And it says on there that I'm the, you know, that I have an inheritance from the Creator.
Hmm.
I don't know if I sent that to you, and I'll send it over to you.
Okay,
and,
cool. So if people are listening to this and they want to keep up to date with all this information that you're putting out, can they get on your mailing list or something or what?
Yeah, I posted in this thing. My email address is courtofrecord@AOL.com.
Okay.
So courtofrecord@AOL.com, court of record.
Okay, great.
And then a gal was nice enough to put together a WordPress, if I can read this, and she put it down as Rob, R-O-B, courtofrecord.wordpress.com.
Oh, yeah.
And so as I put emails out, she just has them posted there.
Oh, okay.
So if you're looking for my old stuff, it's all there, right? But anything I do new, if you send me an email at courtofrecord@AOL.com, then, you know, you've agreed to be on my email list, so don't complain when I send you things, you know?
Okay. That's really interesting, Rob. This is really, I mean, there's so much information you've just put out. It completely boggled my mind. But you know, when I get a chance to kind of listen back to it and digest what you've told me, I'm sure I'll catch up at some
point. Yeah, look, it's because we've been trained not to look at it this way, brother. That's why it's so difficult. It didn't come to me the first time either, you know. So yeah. I had to reread it, and take things out of Blackstones and then go find words I could live with, you know, that meant something to me to replace the words that he was using, you know, by whatever the definition of the word was, you know. So, like the Spaniard, I listened to him the other day, you had him on, and, you know, he wants to do some wonderful things, you know, and if they would just put these seals on their piece of paper, they would get everything they ask for. Mm. Because, man, everything is available to man. You just have to ask for it. And, you know, through this process, Ben, I've had lots of calls and conversations with people who told me very strange things that have happened in court. Mm. You know, that we would say, okay, they just let somebody win, maybe, but, you know, maybe not. Maybe somebody, if they have magic words, maybe we do too. And when you use those magic words, it changes what happens in the court.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. Now, you don't need to go to court to use those words because you are the court of record. So you just put them on a document and send it into their system through the private public window, which is the notary public. Right? And once they put their seal on it as a justice of the peace, it has the same force and power as a seal from a Supreme Court justice.
Rob, I'm thinking, do you think we could come back another time and perhaps just focus on, like, you know, like each individual kind of area and really go through it?
Well, that's the only way I could do it, brother, is we'd have to pick one thing and just, you know, talk about that mostly. And everything's got little spider webs go off. But, you know, they're all kind of main rivers all going into one place that, you know, the only status you want to have is as a man. And if you got to be a person, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you can do it as a man. You're just going to do it with deeds as a man instead of contracts as a person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm going to have to get going here shortly anyways, but okay. I think we probably covered enough for today. And go back and listen to it, brother, and, you know, it'll make sense to you. It's all in there.
Well, this is a great kind of overview and an introduction to all these things. So I'm sure it's going to stimulate people's thinking and introduce them to these ideas. So, yeah.
Well, and hopefully they'll post a bunch of questions on your site or something. And then we have something to talk about. What are the questions? You know, I mean, I don't know. I can talk for hours, but about what? You know, so.
Yeah. I'd love to, you know, when we get a chance, I'd love to come back and talk more, you know, and we'll see how it evolves. So, I really enjoyed talking to you, Rob. Thanks for your time.
It's lots of fun, Ben. And thanks to you for all you do, man. I mean, you know, that you put it out there, and that's where it needs to be. It needs to be in the public record so people can hear it.
Yeah, cool. Great. So, all right. Well, I'll upload this to YouTube, and then we'll let the questions roll in.
Sounds good. We'll talk again.
All right, Rob.
See you, Ben.
Speak to you. Bye.